Mini episode 284 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.info.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge, mini episode number 284. This is FDH Managing Partner Rick Morris. We've got another one of our great FDH Lounge dignitaries here with us today. We broke down the NBA recently on the program, looking at the summer league, looking at the summer transactions, but primarily the developmental play with the summer league, the young guys, how they were doing. We took a look at them when they were in Orlando about a week or so ago. It was so much fun. We're going to do it again. We haven't done this previously on the show, getting into the in-depth summer analysis of the NBA, but it was tremendous. As we did last time, who better to do it with than good friend, longtime FDH Lounge dignitary, and managing editor of That NBA Lottery Pick. And you can check out all the great information there at thatnbalotterypick.com. Good friend, Ben Chu, joining us again. Ben, how you doing, my friend?
I'm doing very good, Rick. How are you doing on this Sunday? We're in two different sides of the United States right now, so East Coast, West Coast. I think it's so far been a very cool day, hopefully, for you in the Ohio Basin at this period of time.
Yes. A little better here in the greater Cleveland area than it has been. I trust in the Pacific Northwest you're keeping it cool, as always. And neither one of us, it seems, subject to some of the throes of Mother Nature the last couple of days, like the folks down in Las Vegas. Weather-wise, that's been something that's really been threatening to push the Summer League off the top of the headlines, it seems like. Those folks there are not used to getting the monsoon-like conditions that they have been in recent days.
Oh, yeah, especially. And then for the end of the consolation round, they had one final game at the Cox Pavilion between Dallas and Chicago. And there was a possible leak in the roof that possibly would have canceled that game if the rain started to fall down and onto the court. Because obviously it's a consolation game, it doesn't really matter. But they were able to finish the game out. But that just seeing some of the pictures being shown during that delay, it was a torrential downpour that I don't think Las Vegas has ever seen, at least in the last 50 years.
No. I understand there was some standing water on the floor at Caesars, which in and of itself sounds like something that I don't quite know how that would work, because the parts of Caesars that I'm thinking of, if they're thinking casino floor, that's raised up from street level there in Las Vegas. So I don't exactly know the mechanics of how they would have standing water there. But, yeah, it just you and I were talking about this a little bit off air, 0.22 inches of rain, I believe, recorded at McCarran International Airport on Friday, which set a new record. And you and I are just wondering, well, how can that be a record out there? I think we were both assuming that the water must just evaporate when it hits the ground under normal conditions, and that's not even getting logged as counting until a certain point here, which I suppose makes sense because of all the heat out there. But just really, really strange timing that we were going to do this segment anyways, and Mother Nature ends up inserting herself into the story.
Considering how the play was at the beginning of summer league, going into the end, going into this tournament bracket round, it makes a lot of sense of how you can make comparisons to how the rain was falling for certain guys like Dennis Schroeder and C.J. McCollum, and the actual rain that possibly could have canceled a summer league game. I'm pretty sure that in the history of the Las Vegas summer league, and I looked this up to double check this, which it dates back to the early 2000s. That no game at the Summer League has ever been canceled because of a rain delay or any sort of weather delay. So thankfully they were able to complete that game, and we are able to move on and talk about this tournament format that we're in for the first time.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's a different format this year. We've talked about that a little bit in the previous segment and a little bit off air. And again, it adds a little bit of extra intrigue out there to the way that things are going. And the way that everything had slotted in terms of the semifinals coming into the weekend, third seed Phoenix against 18th seed Miami, top seed Golden State against number 5 seed Charlotte. So you have a real grab bag of teams around the association there when you're looking at that Final Four.
And I think you do, and it in a way it builds a testament to how the Summer League plays out for certain teams. Like for the first matchup of the day, Phoenix and Miami, I like to say those are two completely separate teams in differences, because Miami, who the bulk of their team came over from the Orlando Summer League, they don't have any real big names on their team outside of Jarvis Renardo. But considering how they've played of late, they've played great team basketball, been able to move the ball really well. One standout guy I have to take note of is DJ Kennedy. He has the ability to get to the hoop, and his three-point shooting has been much improved throughout this tournament. And in the totality for Phoenix, if you look at their team, it's essentially almost their starting lineup or backup reserve players for the team. Both of the Morris brothers are playing in the Summer League, along with their draft pick last season, Kendall Marshall. And then you have a bunch of those MBDL guys who have experience, who can put together solid performances for Phoenix. So looking at that overall, I'm going to assume, Rick, as you probably would too, I think Phoenix is most likely going to take it. But it wouldn't shock me if Miami's a little bit, since none of those guys are guaranteed roster spots, they're a little bit hungrier.
Exactly. And I remember joking with you off air the other day about teams like Phoenix or Minnesota to a certain extent, if you're taking K-Love out of the equation and maybe Rubio. But the teams that are going to have the advantage in something like this, and I think it's less of a joke than the truth, are the ones where if you were to look at their summer league roster, there ain't much difference between what their regular NBA roster is going to be versus the Miami Heat. There is a galaxy of difference between who's suiting up for them in the summer and who's suiting up for them when it counts.
Right, and especially for Phoenix, one player that I forgot to mention, Archie Goodwin had a fantastic game last night going into the semifinal round. And I think overall, especially with a lot of guys like Archie Goodwin who came out of Kentucky, who didn't exactly have the greatest years there, it really feels that you have to make an impact. And it seems at certain points, these guys have to find ways to break out. And for Goodwin, his big breakout game was last night, because he had an absolutely fantastic performance for Phoenix against Toronto.
You know, and that's a guy that I talked about last time we did this segment on the show. Again, it's so intriguing to me in this microwave age that we live in now, how you go from being red hot to ice cold, really in the blink of an eye. Part of one of John Calipari's patented huge recruiting classes at Kentucky last year. Okay, I understand that. He didn't have the greatest of years relative to expectation, and maybe more to the point, neither did the rest of the team, which maybe kind of reflected on a lot of them pretty poorly, although it didn't seem to really stick to Nerlens Noel that much, maybe because he was injured and missed the worst parts of the season. But a guy like this, I didn't understand how he slid as much as he did in the draft, because you had a draft where really past only a tiny handful of picks, you were just gambling on upside, or you were gambling on this or that or whatever. The notion of a lot of teams going for guys with lower ceilings than Archie Goodwin, but maybe more of a sure thing in their mind, I don't understand that, Ben. It was a very poor draft. I don't understand in a poor draft how you couldn't like the upside. I'm not just playing 20-20 hindsight here, because I've been saying it all along, and who's to say if he's going to keep this up that much, but he certainly showed what he's capable of, didn't he?
Yeah, especially at Kentucky, he showed flashes in his freshman season. And it felt to me, at least, that he has the talent to be a good player, or at least a good role player for Phoenix. But then again, you'll see guys like, for example, Toronto's Dwight Fikes, who have these great summer leagues, but they don't really pan out to having good, solid NBA careers, even though they have impressive summer leagues there. Another guy that we had to note for, in terms of a rookie who showed up in the summer league, was Reggie Bullock with the Clippers. And a lot of people, especially for the first 2 days he played at UNC last season, not a lot of people talked about him. He was a great talent, but he can shoot the ball. And there's a lot of talk that he might be that 10th or 11th guy for the Clippers that can come in and just make shots.
Well, in talking about these kind of players and in talking about LA, there's another example of this I'd like to ask you about, that being Wester Hudson, who has been making a mark again here a little bit with summer league play. I remember his stint with the Cavaliers, where he looked like a world beater towards the end of the season about a year or so ago. What is it with guys like that, and what does Archie Goodwin need to avoid, and players like him, as far as getting typecast as just a spotty kind of a player, somebody who doesn't show up all of the time. Essentially, what's the difference between guys like that and guys who are able to do it on a more consistent basis and be at least borderline star players in the league?
I think, Rick, overall, it's really just two things. One, it's being able to be consistent with your game, but being also to make the correct basketball IQ plays. Because for a lot of these players, especially coming out of small colleges, they were the man. They were the guy who was supposed to come out and produce. And you will see a lot of these guys, they can put points on the board. But at the end of the day, they have to figure out how they fit within a team structure. And through a lot of the analysis from the Vegas Summer League is that a lot of the players are still trying to find their own little niche in the NBA game and with a certain team. Two other guys that I would think right off the top of my head that would be beneficial to that would be John Henson of the Bucks and Thomas Robinson, who's now with the Portland Trailblazers. Those are two premier talent guys that came out with their draft classes, and they just never panned out. But right now they're trying to find their role. They're trying to get better. And the best part about the Vegas Summer League is you're allowed to work on your tools, work on your shooting, work on your passing, work on those effort plays and rebounding without having to worry about, well, we're going to lose this game. It's one of those very few things that explains to me why I like the NBA so much, is that we have the opportunity to look at some of these guys and see how talented they are.
That's true. Something like this is a tremendous window onto guys like that. And when you're talking about the supernovas of this summer, relatively speaking here, I'm not even sure that the guy's going to make the rotation next year for Golden State, but he's sure making a good effort at it as we're speaking right now. Kent Bazemore, one of these guys who, again, has gone from being a colorful guy on the bench to somebody who's really been making a real impact this summer. How have you been able to assess his play as he's been going along?
I mean, for him overall, for Bazemore, he showed flashes of this at Old Dominion University. And this year, it seems like with the way that Golden State's team is playing, and then or later today they're going to be playing in Charlotte in the other semifinal game, the way that Bazemore plays is that he's a very high-energy guy. He can put the ball in the basket, but he can also get to the rim, which was shown apparent as he had two highlight dunks over the last two games. And I think specifically for Bazemore, with the leaving of Jarrett Jack to go to Cleveland, I think Bazemore has the perfect opportunity to fit in as that second guard off the bench that can come in and get you easy offense when need be. But to give Golden State credit for their team right now, they have a really just rock-solid team in Vegas, especially with Draymond Green, the former Michigan State product, who dropped 20 pounds himself, and he looks much different than what he did during the NBA regular season last year going into the playoffs.
Well, that can make a world of difference, condition in particular, if you're at the fringes of the league, as so many of the guys in this whole tournament are. When you're looking at Bazemore's play, I know that from some of the notes that you'd given me, your thoughts on play in the tournament thus far, the young guards overall, you go beyond Bazemore, but one of the real stories of the tournament here, Ray McCallum, C.J. McCallum, Dennis Schrader, the way that they've been looking out there. So what do you think this tournament has told us about what their futures could be going into the next season?
Honestly, I think a lot of them are very bright. Dennis Schrader didn't exactly have the best summer league numbers. He currently finished average of about 11 points and 4 assists. But you can see that he has a Tony Parker-type body that can penetrate and then kick out to make plays. And I think in today's NBA, we're going to see a lot more of that kick-out game that Greg Popovich likes to run down in San Antonio. And in regards to who, in terms of the rookie who had the most impressive summer league, you have to pretty much give it to McCollum in Portland, because he essentially led his team through most of these games, averaged over 20 points. And especially with Portland, who doesn't exactly have the deepest bench in the NBA right now, a guy like that coming off the bench, giving a spell to Damian Lillard at times, is going to be something much needed for that team. But, I mean, the guy that impressed me the most, Rick, was Ray McCollum out of Sacramento. Here's a kid who was a McDonald's All-American. He went to University of Detroit Mercy to play for his father. Had a solid career. Didn't exactly have a great one. There was some talk coming out of the draft. Is he a good passer? Can he be the distributor? Can he put points on the board for your team if he needs to? And I think he can do all of that. And especially in a Sacramento situation right now, when you have Isaiah Thomas, Revis Vasquez, and him, it wouldn't shock me to see McCollum go become the number one guard just because of his ability to make plays in an offense and his height. Since Thomas is a little bit shorter, 5'11", McCallum's a little bit 6'2", 6'3", I think it would not shock me, very similar to the Jeremy Lin situation a couple of years, that McCallum can come out and have a huge season for Sacramento this year and eventually become the starter of their future.
Yeah, I guess anything's possible. We've talked about this previously on the show, that one of the biggest messes in the league the last couple of years has been putting together the attempts to put together a rotation in Sacramento and assigning consistent roles to people. So, yeah, it would seem like anybody's got a chance to kind of emerge if they play well enough there, at least for a period of time. The Schrader comparison to Tony Parker, I hadn't heard that before, but I find that very intriguing just because that's a guy that was a real sleeper in the draft, a real hipster pick. I kept seeing a lot of chatter in there about, oh, whoever takes him somewhere in the teens is going to be real happy with him. Good developmental prospect down the road, good upside. Very, very interesting because, again, you look at another guy coming over from Europe, Tony Parker, and there was a little bit less chatter about him at the time. He slid further in the draft, but it was that same kind of vibe, I suppose, a guy that you're taking for the future that you're hoping is really going to kind of develop. So from what you're saying, that could pan out very, very well for Atlanta in the years to come.
And that, in a way, it makes their re-signing of Jeff Teague a little more interesting at that time, but I think they're probably going to use Schrader, bring him along very slowly, similar to what Popovich did with Parker in San Antonio. And then speaking of other Atlanta Hawks rookie, Lucas Nogueira, the 7-footer, who everyone's going to remember him for his afro under the Boston Celtics before he got traded to the Hawks. He had a fantastic defensive effort in the final couple of summer league games because he's a guy who's a big rangy guy. He has sort of like the Anthony Davis body, but you can tell he has that shot blocking ability, very similar to the Kemba Mutombo at the end of the day. And it feels that if Atlanta's going to use those two as their core guys going into the future, I think they have the possibility to put together a very good team. And it's going to be interesting to see in the next 2 to 4 years what Danny Ferry decides to do with that roster. Because there are plenty of guys who can play, but there's also some question marks about, well, should Al Horford play the 5? Should he stay at the 4? Do you have enough offense on that team currently? So it's still a work in progress in Atlanta, but I think they have a chance to be a fantastic team.
Yeah, and I think he's still got enough elasticity in terms of the payroll that they could really go in different directions if they needed to try to do something dramatic. It's funny when you're talking about bigger bodies here, that's another story of the tournament, it seems like, as well. Jonas Valanciunas for Toronto really kind of stepping up, and again, for a guy who's had a fairly lackluster time of it thus far, coming into the summer, again, he has just gone way beyond expectations. So what are your expectations going into next year for him based on what he's shown in Vegas? He's got the physicality working a little bit better. He's really kind of toned up a little bit. But do you see a whole lot of this carrying over to next year? It seems like Toronto's going to need it too.
Yeah, I mean, especially if they're trading of Andrea Bargnani to the Knicks. Valanciunas is going to have to step up. But looking through, if you were to base it just on his summer league performance, he looked dominant. To be fair, as a skeptic at times, he was playing against lesser talent. He didn't really face any big guys over that period of time. And it seems to me, at least, that he has the chance to solidify that 5 position for Toronto. And that's a team right now that has a lot of great pieces, but I don't know where they're going to end up. They have the opportunity to be a playoff team and possibly a contending team down the line, but I don't know if Jonas Valanciunas is summer success is going to translate to his NBA success at this time.
Yeah, that remains to be seen. He definitely has a lot to prove based on what the initial production was coming into the NBA. So, yeah, he's going to have a lot to and as you said, they're really going to need a lot out of him with having moved Bargnani to New York. It's his show now if he's going to be able to go in there and try to do something. As far as it goes with Spruckles here, I mean, it hasn't all been sunshine and strawberries during this tournament. You got some guys this summer that have looked a little bit weaker than expected. Otto Porter, a guy who was supposed to have a pretty pro-ready kind of game, maybe not up to the level of performance thus far that we thought we might have seen. And Ben McLemore, the guy thought they have maybe the greatest ceiling of anybody in the draft. Oh, he's the next Ray Allen. Well, not yet, apparently. So what are your thoughts on these guys? I mean, it's easy to overreact at this point, but how alarmed should fans be about their performances?
At this point, I really wouldn't think too alarmed, especially in the case of McLemore, who had just two awful games to start his Vegas Summer League. He started to come on later going into the consolation bracket rounds, and he has the talent to be a great player, and the real question is his ability to hit the three at the NBA level going to be tested? Because in the first two games of the Summer League for the Kings, he looked god-awful from three. It looked like he couldn't hit, you know, water out of a well with the ball at that point. So it just seems like he's going to have to figure out what makes him, how he needs to get into the game and how he's going to be able, is he going to be sort of that Ray Allen type who spots up and shoots, or is he going to be more that Tyreke Evans, the guy they lost to New Orleans, who's going to be able to hit shots when he needs to, but he can also get to the basket as well. The biggest disappointment for me, Rick, so far had to be Otto Porter. I think a lot of us thought Otto Porter, in terms of the rookie class we got, maybe outside of Alec Flynn, had the most NBA-ready game. And during the Wizards' run in this tournament, it just he didn't really show up at all. It seemed like he was either doing too much at times or he wasn't doing enough at times. And as you can understand, he's going to be able to grow with that team. And there was some question marks how healthy was he. He did suffer a knee injury during a Wizards practice prior to the Vegas Summer League. So it wouldn't shock me if that was in his head a little bit. But it's going to be confusing. And, I mean, there were plenty of guys during the Summer League who struggle, who end up having solid careers. But at the end of the day, just looking at the way Porter played, I'm not too impressed. And maybe he was one of those situations where he was the best player on a really balanced team. That he's not going to be the star, he's going to be the complementary piece that will play and help you win a title at best.
I'm almost kind of wondering here, maybe this is kind of a strange thought, but I wonder if a tournament like this necessarily plays to his strengths or not. A guy who is thought to be on a scale of 1 to 10, maybe a 7.5 to an 8.5 in a lot of different areas, really not a 9 or a 10 and hardly any, versus a lot of guys who we talked about before, that the guys who have come in, like Lester Hudson, who are capable of just really lighting it up for a night, or somebody like Archie Goodwin, who has to prove that he can be consistent, but on a given night might be more spectacular. Is a guy like this maybe a little bit more likely to look like a wallflower because he's just the guy who shows up and gives you a solid performance every night?
I think you're correct, and I think it's a lot tougher to figure how a guy like Porter, especially within the Summer League, is going to react, because he's one of those like five tool guys who will put together solid performances, but he won't wow anybody. And coming from, you know, being an early lottery pick, you expect a wow sort of effort from a lot of guys, but it's one of those weird situations. But also, I mean, in the exact opposite, another player who had very low expectations coming in, Charlotte's Cody Zeller, had a solid summer league. He looked at times to be a fantastic pick for them. But you then, again, have to question, well, is Zeller playing just less than stellar competition, or is he just better than everyone thought he was going to be? And I think at this time you have to question how much the Summer League actually means to certain guys. And especially with a rookie class, they don't want to have bad games, but there are going to be periods you're going to be under a smaller microscope than in comparison to the guys trying to make the roster or just trying to make that jump from the NBDL to the NBA.
Absolutely, and as rare as it is, sometimes some legitimate news can come out of the Summer League vis-a-vis the future roles of some players on their various teams, and that one example being my hometown Cleveland Cavaliers, some news made as Mike Brown had been out there checking things out and made the definitive pronouncement, Deion Waiters will be almost completely at shooting guard this year, which is not a big surprise. Jared Jack's a combo guard. He can assume the backup duties for Kyrie Irving, a point guard for the Cavs. So when all three of those guys are healthy, and that's the proviso I think you have to make, that Waiters is going to be playing pretty much just shooting guard. So it's rare, but once in a while you will have something take shape like that. And then that, of course, gave Waiters something to focus on. Okay, I need to solidify my game at the two guard, not maybe necessarily have to worry about having the handle too much.
And I think especially with the Summer League, and we've said this in Orlando during that period of time, and then we said it about Vegas too, is that there are a lot of guys who are just trying to improve their game in a more structured setting. And outside of, you know, minor league baseball or spring or fall baseball for a professional baseball players, there's not really a lot of that in the other professional sports leagues. And that's what makes the NBA a very unique place, because you can have these younger guys come in and practice and get better. And that's exactly what you need. You need a structured format to do that in, because sure, you can go play in the Drew League or the Goodman League, but those are just at best exhibition games where you're not really trying to do anything special. You're just trying to make yourself a highlight that you can put on YouTube and then tweet out to all your followers at best.
That's a very good point. Minor league baseball, and especially in the Caribbean ball, the off-season ball, is probably the closest point of comparison that you could make in any of the other sports here. In hockey, you've got the international competitions, so I guess there's a little bit of that. But the fact that you have this year, you kind of have it like minor league baseball, where the players are attached to a certain team. These players are playing for certain franchises. Again, it really does make it unique and something for the hoops fanatics to really be able to follow and sink their teeth into. Before we hit a few just general NBA headlines to wrap up here, any other thoughts on Summer League we haven't hit yet?
I think there's only one specific one I want to talk about, and that was the play of Chicago Bulls guard Andrew Godlock. And he pretty much, if you wanted to name a Summer League MVP, it would pretty much be him. He averaged over 24 points for Chicago. And this really shouldn't surprise anyone, because he was the D-League MVP last year, and he did have a starring role for the Lakers in the playoffs, even though they got swept by the Spurs. So it's not really surprising to me that Godlock can play, but I'm more interested to see, if he does stick with Chicago, is he going to be the primary backup for Derrick Rose, or is that going to be Kirk Heinrich, or are they going to try and bring someone else in? So I think overall, if we had to like microcosm everything about the Vegas Summer League, is that rookies that were supposed to show up showed up, and there were some names who we, you know, knew that were around NBA rosters like Kent Bazemore who could show up and can play. And I think we're all excited that the NBA can extend this a couple extra days, and we can get a pseudo champion of this. And at least this time around, in comparison to Orlando, we're going to actually see a trophy being awarded to a team instead of very stylish hats.
Yeah, trophy greater than hats. Anytime you have something like that going on, yeah, you might as well do it in a tournament format. You might as well give something tangible to play for, as opposed to just, oh, well, I want to go out there and have a great individual performance and, you know, try and rise up on the radar a little bit. They are wearing team jerseys after all, so the teams might as well have something to strive for, even if the general public kind of sleeps on the importance of it. It gives a sense of how different organizations are at developing players. As far as different organizations go, just one quick note towards the end that I want to hit among a few things here, get your thoughts on this. The LA Lakers, who are alleged by many to be playing by a different set of rules in the league, if you're looking at something like that, I guess Exhibit A among recent tidbits of news would be this rumor that the Four Letter Network had out there that the Lakers were going to go sign LeBron and that they were going to sign Carmelo next summer when these guys opt out of their contracts. And of course, everything is perfectly deniable, and oh, there's no proof that we said that. But as much as any of us might tend to be skeptical towards any unsourced reports that network is putting out, it is perfectly plausible. It is perfectly in line with the way that they do business. This now gives them something to sell season tickets on for a season. Hey, you don't want to miss out a year from now when we have our new super team here. So it gives everybody there something to latch onto for the next 12 months in a way that if it were any other team, you'd have to think they'd be under the microscope for tampering. But it's the Lakers, so I don't think any of us should hold our breaths on there being any kind of enforcement of that provision.
I think the real question, Rick, is going to be going forward is how the NBA decides to deal with these tampering rules. Because with these rules were clearly created in the pre-social networking age. And
yes,
with pretty much with Twitter, with Facebook, you're going to have, you know, PR guys or management try to push agendas for certain teams. And it feels to me that those tampering rules are going to become dated. The Board of Governors are still having a meeting currently in Vegas, so I still think they're going to probably take a look at that in the future. I don't think if it's just hearsay, you're really going to get tampering in comparison to the situation with Houston Rockets GM Daryl Morey, who got fined by the league for over $200,000 because he made comments about the Dwight Howard signing before the Dwight Howard signing actually happened.
True, yeah. This whole lag time thing of you can reach agreements with a player, but you can't comment on it publicly over the summer, that's kind of strange also. I think you're right about that there is something the league's going to have to do as far as getting everything on a consistent basis. And maybe having a new commissioner coming in and Adam Silver will give the opportunity to do just that, maybe take a fresh look at a few things. As far as a fresh look goes, also, they're going to be getting that down in Charlotte, maybe not necessarily with the quality of basketball on the court, but after this season, the Bobcats become the Hornets again, since that name has been abdicated by the New Orleans now Pelicans. So I know they think that it's going to help get back some of that pretty good 90s heritage in Charlotte, but what are your thoughts on what it's going to do? To my point of view, it's going to matter much, much less than what happens on the court in the final season as the Bobcats.
Right. I think overall, and you can say this about Charlotte, I mean, whenever you have a franchise that ever leaves, you really like to stay true to the original identity. And especially during those golden years with Alonzo, Larry Johnson, Muggsy Bogues, it's nice to have a sort of come back to that old. And to be brutally honest, like we all say, no one really embraced the Bobcats. Let's remember the owner of the team at that time was Robert Johnson. There was jokes that he called them the Bobcats after himself. So it's going to be a good thing for the Bobcats turning into the Hornets. I just don't really see how much of a big difference it's going to make overall, mainly just because the only thing it can really do is it will give some goodwill and it will sell some jerseys, sell some tickets. And you might see some throwbacks of like Rex Chapman or Muggsy at games now. But at the end of the day, it's all about, and there's been this talk during the discussions during the Sonics Kings move about local pride and civic pride. And if the Charlotte NBA franchise wants to go back to their roots, there's nothing wrong with that. But at some point, we're going to have to try and talk the Utah Jazz into giving the Jazz name back to New Orleans and giving Utah, you know, a better, more applicable name at that point.
I have no idea what that would even be.
I think the Utah Mavericks would be a good name.
It might. There are several ones that would be extraordinarily politically incorrect, I suppose, that come to mind if you're talking about Utah and some of the alleged lifestyle things out there. But, yeah, that would be an interesting contest to have on what would be replacing the Jazz. The other thing that kind of jumped out at me in the last week here, a tale of two markets here. Brooklyn, with their gazillionaire owner, going to be shelling out way above the luxury tax level, paying an insane amount next year, the year after, and into the foreseeable future, versus Oklahoma City, which is getting a little bit of coin back from the league for the Kevin Durant contract. Very interesting.
Yeah, I think overall that really is an interesting situation with the Durant signing and the contract and working that out. There's always going to be tiers of teams in the league, Rick. That's always going to happen. And it doesn't shock me that a team like Oklahoma City, who under, you know, the shady negotiations got to Oklahoma City at that period of time, if they could get a little bit of money back from the league. But, I mean, if we're going to go towards talking about Brooklyn, I think Prokhorov knows that his team has a shelf life at its current state. And I think he also saw the way Miami played in the finals against San Antonio. They looked like a beatable team. And he thought, if I can acquire enough pieces to make my team 1-5 as balanced as they are right now, they can win a title there. It would not shock me to see them win the NBA title next season. But it's going to be a question is, are you going to pour all the money in now, or should you just wait a little longer and try and pour money into the future? It's the ultimate conundrum for every NBA owner.
Well, two thoughts about what you said about the markets there, Ben. First of all, in Oklahoma City, I'm sure Sam Presti is sitting there going, hey, could have used the extra Jack last fall before we had to get ripped off on the James Harden trade. And as far as it goes
right.
with Brooklyn, you talk about expiration dates. I don't know. My sense is the expiration date on that particular label of players might have been May 2011. That's just my sense.
I mean, that's my sense too, Rick. But in terms of the balance of power in the Eastern Conference right now. There's only three or four teams that I can see coming out of the Eastern Conference and going to the finals. It just seems to me at that point, the balance that they have and in terms of how solid their bench is currently for the Nets, it seems to me that they're going to be a contender. The real question is, are they going to have enough to get past the Indiana Pacers and make that big push at the end of the day? But for what everyone used to say about George Steinbrenner, you really can't blame someone who has the money to spend it and wants a championship. At the end of the day, I think a lot of owners in every sport don't play to win a championship. They play for the sake of making money and trying to build their brand at the end of the day.
Oh, that's true. That's true. You know, and here at the very end, at the risk of being a little bit of a homer, if we're talking about owners that have that point of view, you got to put Dan Gilbert in the discussion. They had the press conference this week announcing the signing of Andrew Bynum. You know, if the guy has enough cartilage that he's able to regrow in his knees miraculously with modern science, him, Kyrie, next June, a man could dream, can't he, Ben?
I think he can. And again, the thing we noted in our last podcast was that his contract is built in a way that Cleveland is really not giving up any cap flexibility or any high risk. At best, Bynum's going to make $6 million this year. And considering there are a lot of other players around the league making $8 to $10 million who don't even have his potential or ceiling, I would rather waste $6 million on a guy who might not play the season, but have the possibility to be my starting center. And if looking across the league, Rick, outside of maybe three or four guys, if Cleveland can get a center, they will be a notable competitor, considering how Kyrie, Deion Waiters, and Anthony Bennett play out this season.
Yeah. In the words of the great Michael Scott, absolutely, that is definitely correct. But, Ben, always a pleasure breaking down the hoops with you, my friend, and we'll have to do so again very soon as the 2013-2014 season takes shape. It's going to be a historic one, the last year of David Stern, the last year before next year's big draft, which is going to be the biggest one in 11 years. You got a lot of teams that are openly tanking at this point, the last one before LeBron, Carmelo, et cetera, all end up opting out, allegedly, next summer. It's going to be huge, and it's going to be great tracing it along with you, Ben.
Oh, I think it will be too, Rick. And I'm excited as anyone for Andrew Wiggins' Tankapalooza.
Yeah, and the Jabari Parker consolation prize, not too shabby for the number two team either. We'll keep following this sucker as it goes all the way along. Thanks for being on, Ben. Thank you all for tuning in. FDH Lounge mini episode number 284.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, All Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IAmBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Paper Mate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Aquafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.